Art Scene Radio Talk Show.
Welcome to episode 4 of The Arts, the Art Scene Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, Radman.
And I'm Anthem, your co-host.
Today's date is May 27th, 2004. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, The Arts is a variety talk show dedicated to the scene, including graphics, demos, tracking, and all things in between. Filling in for this episode is Anthem. Spinsane had scheduling conflicts for this show, so he wasn't able to make it. Appreciate very much, Anthem, you know, being a part of this show. Hopefully, Spinsane will be able to join us for future episodes. If not, we'll just continue to roll with things as they come. As we say in every episode, there is no set release schedule. So far, we've been maintaining a semi-bi-monthly release. The only real difficulty in putting together the art show is scheduling and getting everybody involved together on the show at one time across different time zones. And so that's basically the biggest hurdle that we have. The content, we could produce shows every day. There's enough content for that.
Definitely.
So here we are, episode 4.
Yeah, pretty good stuff, man.
This episode, we're going to be featuring two different interviews. We have an interview with Novus, the organizer of the Mike Compo, which is a monthly invitational competition for musical trackers, which is a pre-recorded interview that we did last week. We'll also be speaking live with artist Diffswitch at the How Job Demo Show in Cologne, Germany. We'll also be covering numerous other current events, but first we have emails. We have an email here from Unseen Fate of Moon Hazard. Unsi wrote in with some great suggestions for future episodes and also mentioned that INF winners of the demo compo at The Gathering 2004 tend to include recipes in almost all of their demos as some sort of a trademark. He believes that Propaganda 2001 is one of their best demos to date and highly recommends it.
Let's check that out.
Yeah. If you'd like to email us, we can be reached at radio@acid.org. We appreciate any feedback that we receive. When you do write us an email, please specify how to properly pronounce your name or your alias in case we select your message for a future episode.
Damn right. So the Arts Mirrors.
Yeah, the Arts Mirrors. The Arts generates a lot of network traffic, so we definitely would like to thank a few people out there who are providing us with the bandwidth necessary to help serve out this show. First and foremost is nxtech.net, our primary host. They're serving out dozens upon dozens of gigabytes just related to the arts show.
Damn, there's some swell people over there.
We're also being mirrored at Dark Domain, Hacker Media, and TextFiles.com. TextFiles.com has a really extensive audio archive at audio.textfiles.com. If you're into scene talk radio shows, definitely check out audio.textfiles.com. And Hacker Media is also carrying several other shows as well. We've also, just recently, we've been picked up by archive.org, which is now storing high-fidelity, uncompressed versions of the show.
I want to know where they're getting all the storage from. How are they going to do that, man?
Actually, I'm glad that you brought that up, because it just so happens that I took a field trip to the Internet Archive 2 weeks ago.
So did you freak out and you saw their network storage center? Was it huge?
I didn't actually get to go within, like, their network operations center or anything like that. I visited, you know, the equivalent of their business office in the Presidio, which is located in San Francisco. We went down there. They have kind of an open table thing that you can attend on Fridays. Hack, who is a longtime ACID member, joined me, and we went and took a field trip to the Internet Archive there and shared some Lebanese food with all the archive.org folks there.
Damn, that sounds pretty good.
As far as storage goes, right now they have something to the tune of 700 terabytes of storage.
Oh my God.
When we went there, we got to see the very first build of the petabox. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, it's basically a petabyte of storage in one big giant box, right?
Actually, it's a misnomer. The petabox is actually 100 terabytes per unit.
So that makes it 10 petabytes, right?
10 petaboxes would equate out to be an actual petabyte then.
Yeah, 1,000.
So this was the very first build of that, the first box, which is going to be, I'm sure actually by now it's been shipped off to Amsterdam. They're planning on building 12 more by the end of this year. So three of them will stay here in San Francisco, and the other nine are going to be going over to Amsterdam. And I guess what they're going to be doing then is they're going to have a full petabyte in both locations, so they'll be able to have mirrors of the data of the Internet Archive and all their other archives that they're branching out into.
Mm-hmm.
In two different geographic locations, which is probably a wise idea. Considering,
yeah, definitely. You don't want one person hitting up all the servers.
If there was any sort of, like, catastrophe or something to hit one spot, you'd definitely want a backup of the other. they're planning on, of course, after they've accomplished that, they're planning on building more petaboxes and setting up other satellite locations around the world. So there will be multiple internet archives that you can visit. And from what I understood, they're also in the process of developing some sort of a standard protocol to handle this voluminous amount of data.
Now, this archive.org, this reaches far beyond the scene, correct? This is just any sort of multimedia archive in one spot on the internet.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. If you've never heard of archive.org, maybe you might have heard of it by way of the Wayback Machine. They host something that's called the Wayback Machine, which basically takes snapshots of basically all the websites that are on the internet.
Whoa.
So they have, for example, let's say you wanted to visit acid.org 5 years ago. You could do that. So if there's any site that went down and it had some very useful information, you could just go over to archive.org and put that in, and it'll have several instances, several different mirrors of those sites. It's somewhat limited in what it mirrors. It doesn't mirror binaries. Obviously, that would probably dry up the well pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But as far as the web content goes, the HTML is pretty much almost always there, and for a large part, you'll also find that most of the JPEGs are there as well. It's very extensive in what it covers, and they're starting to branch out now. They're starting to archive other mediums other than just, you know, the internet. Let's see, on that site they're starting to collect live concerts such as the Grateful Dead, things like this.
Now, couldn't that be construed as illegal under DCMA?
Actually, they always make sure that things are, you know, cleared. You know, they always go through some sort of a rights clearance check. They have a process for that, and they've also received certain exemptions under the DMCA. They've actually filed and received exemptions under the DMCA. There's a huge thing on their website that covers all of that. So, yes, you could, but they're a nonprofit organization, which, I mean, the whole point of their existence is to preserve everything that's out there. They're archiving many different things. They have a lot of vintage video on their site as well that you can pull up. And the interesting thing is, when I mentioned that they have the art show in high fidelity in an uncompressed version, not only do they have it in a WAV format, uncompressed, but they also have several different derivatives of that. They have a script, so when you upload these files, they have what's called a deriver, and it will go through and slice and dice into a multitude of other different formats, such as FLAC and OGG and MP3, couple different flavors of MP3, as well as streaming formats.
Now, the question, so any old person can just go up there and upload something they want to archive, or do you have to have a special membership of sorts?
It does require registration, and, you know, you wouldn't be able to go there and upload, you know, a Britney Spears song or something like that.
Yeah.
If it can be justified, I think that, you know, they would probably have an interest in it. I think it's handled on a case-by-case basis. That's kind of the reason why they have these Friday meetings like I attended 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Is for you to, if you have something that you wanted to store on the Internet Archive, you would go down there and present yourself and give a presentation on the topic that you want to store there.
Well, that sounds like a mighty fine creation, Radman. Because you know what? This is like by far the most badass talk show there is out there, and it would suck if we lost it to time.
That's a good point, man.
What's going on with the current events? I hear Demo Vibes 2 is coming up.
Yes, Demo Vibes 2 was released recently. Last episode, we spoke about the original Demo Vibes by Wilby. He's put out Volume 2, which is the Turbo Breakbeat Revenge. It features a bunch of different demo soundtracks released from late 96 to present day. There was a song on there that was released at the last breakpoint. As the title of this particular volume implies, this one is much more hardcore, much more hard-hitting than the original. This volume is available as a mix in a single 100 megabyte MP3 file with the optional cue sheet, so you can burn it to a CDR just like the first one. As a matter of fact, the song that you heard introducing this episode of The Arts is from the demo Taver by Critics of Color and is featured on track 12 of volume 2. So you can pick that up at Wilby's site. It's on Planet D at wilby.planet-d.net. And from there you can navigate to Demo Vibes volume 2, and it looks like there's a third one on the way. If you enjoyed Demo Vibes 1 and 2, you might also want to check out Retro Vibes by Francis. This is a compilation of many of the popular old-school demo soundtracks from the early 90s, also inspired by the recent work of Wilby. There's no cue sheet for this one, but you can pick this up at the Spanish demo scene portal, Escena, at www.escena.org. Okay, Well, that's all I have for demo vibes and demo vibe takeoffs. We have a lot of competitions that are going on right now, as always.
Yeah.
For our zero-day listeners, we have the 4K source code compo. This is the second annual open source 4K demo compo, which is just recently concluded. And now they're calling upon the public to download these real-time animations, some of which include sound, and vote for what we like best.
Well, now, I note on the sound on these things, most of the sound is pretty bad. I mean, it's kind of, it'll take you back a few days when you're making music with a printer.
You know, it's all synthesized, basically.
Yeah.
But they're doing what they can within the confines of 40, 96 bytes of source code. So
yeah, I was really surprised at some of the quality of some of them. Like, what was it? Spasmocore by Skyfer.
Yes.
That would just have a nice little 3D objects rotating, and even used the old synthesized sound. Looked really nice. I really enjoyed that piece.
Yeah, I there were two entries that, for one reason or another, really disliked my sound card, so they didn't get my vote. But some of them, on the other hand, were very, very impressive.
Yeah, I really enjoyed some of them. It was just a great compo, lots of good people coming out. The greatest thing, though, is that, like you said, it's open source. You can go see what people exactly what people did to make this look good and to create something like this.
Yeah.
It's really amazing what they're achieving in such small sizes.
Exactly. Not only did the coders only have 4K to play with for their source code, but they also had to use ANSI C or C++ and make it portable enough to compile on, you know, a Windows 32 or GNU Linux or Mac OS environment. It's really amazing what they've done with such little disk space.
Totally. I just remember the surprise you went through when you saw there are Mac OS X builds on there yesterday. It was like, what gives?
Like we said, the voting deadline for this competition is tomorrow, Friday, May 28th. So if you want to get involved, check these out and make your voice heard. Go to their site. It's 4k.frob.nl/2004. You can download the pack of demos there. They have full source code vote packs as well as Windows 32 precompiled binaries for the Windows users.
Sounds good. Don't forget to vote, guys.
On the music side of competitions, there's Big Chip Compo number 6. Nula is organizing a chip compo with 6 categories ranging from 100 kilobyte competition to a single kilobyte compo, or 1,024 bytes. He also has an old school category for Commodore 64 SIDs, Game Boy, and Atari SAP. The deadline for this, if you want to enter, is August 31st, 2004. To check that out, go to bcompo6.wz.cz for more details. Last show, we talked about the monthly invitational competition. The results for the April competition are out. Vibe took a back-to-back first place win with his chiptune entry entitled Digital Shadows. Did you have an opportunity to vote in time for that, or did you only have a chance to get involved in the May entries?
I really only had a chance to get involved with the main entries, but I did check out his chiptune entry called Digital Shadows, and I really did enjoy it.
We have an interview with Novus, which we taped earlier in the week. Sinsane was able to be with us for this particular taping, so we're going to go ahead and play that for you now. Okay, we're speaking with Novus, the organizer of the monthly invitational compo.
Hey, Sinsane. Hey, Redman.
All right, now, as I understand it, you've been running the monthly invitational competition. Well, first of all, for those of the listeners who aren't familiar with the monthly invitational compo, can you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, sure, not a problem. Basically, what I do is I screen through the new releases sections of a lot of the scene archives out there. I hit most of the big ones. The only big one that I really leave out right now is the mod archive, because the way they handle their new releases is just so squirrely. So it's hard to screen them and find all the new songs. But pretty much everybody else does a good job of isolating newer songs, so you can get them pretty easily. And a lot of what's on mod archives on other sites anyway, so I don't miss a whole lot there. I also hit a lot of personal sites, a lot of group websites, and I basically just burn all the songs to a CD and listen to them at work. And I make notes on the best songs, and finally I just pared down the list to about 10 songs, and I put those up every month for the voters to vote on. But the final pick of what the actual best song is up to the voters.
So on any given month, then, how many different songs do you find you're listening to?
Question. It varies a lot month to month, but it can easily be in the range of anywhere 200 to 400.
How many hours do you estimate that this takes you every month?
Well, I have to cheat somewhat because, of course, if I listen to 400 songs straight through and then listen to them again and again, if I needed to pare it down some, it would obviously take a lot longer than a month to do that. So there's a lot of songs that, you know, within about the first minute or so, I can tell just listening to it, this is not going to be one of the best 10.
Right.
So I'll delete it and move on to the next one. So it probably takes me probably anywhere easily from 10 to 20 hours a month, actually.
Say an artist wanted to get involved in this competition. In what way could an interested musician become involved with your competition?
Well, it's pretty simple. Number one, all they need to do is just release their song in any one of those archive sites that's out there. S3M.com, Qtrans Girls, Modplug Central, pretty much any of those big sites except for the Mod Archive. But if they just release their song, I'm going to catch it and check it out. But if they really want to make sure I hear it, they can also email me or use the form on the site to go ahead and send me the link to the song and their contact information so I can get a hold of them. And there are people that have gotten their songs in there by doing that before, so that's definitely viable. They can also just email me if they do a lot of releases on a regular basis and they want me to screen their website. I can do that as well. And again, all they got to do is just use the form on the website or just email me and let me know what their web address is, and I'll add them to my list to check every month.
Now, I noticed you mentioned that you don't pull from the Mod Archive.
That's correct.
What is the reasoning behind that?
It's basically their new releases page is not really new releases so much as it's just unscreened songs. As a result, it tends to get completely emptied out at random every 2 or 3 weeks or so.
Right.
Once it gets screened through and emptied out and put into the main archive, there is no indication anywhere of when that song was released. You know, basically, if I go on there one day late, one day after all the songs have been emptied out, then I miss all those new releases. It's too difficult to try to keep up with that particular site, so I don't even try.
Now, as I understand it, you've been running this competition for approximately, what, 2 years now?
About 2.5 years.
Okay.
It started actually under a different name and a slightly different system in January of 2002. And before that, it actually ran for about 6 months briefly in 1998. But I revived it in 2002 because there were a few people back then who thought that it was a good compo. In the original incarnation, you could only enter if you had voted on the previous month's songs, so it was a lot different. There were fewer songs involved in the competition, usually only 5 or 6 a month. Once I realized that enough people were voting anyway without entering songs, so there were a lot of people that were just listening and voting, once I realized that I had that sizable of an audience, I switched over to the current system, monthly invitational compo, in January of 2004. So that I could include more songs and hopefully improve the quality of the entries.
So now, by being a part of the monthly invitational compo, I'm sure that this, well, it kind of broadens the listenership for the artists, right? So,
oh, it certainly does.
Do you have any sort of statistics on how many listeners you have and how many people are actually downloading these tracks from your site to sample? I'm sure that there are a lot of people that are involved that might not necessarily be voting, but they want to hear what you are picking or sampling as some of the top 10 best songs that are coming out on any given month.
Oh, certainly. There's plenty of people that will go through. They may only download 2 or 3 songs. They may simply be looking for a song by their favorite artist that may happen to be in MIC that month, and they may just download 2 or 3 songs. Or they may download all 10 just to check them out and just don't feel like taking the time to vote. Or they may go ahead and vote. Of course, the more people who vote, the more accurate the results will be. So I appreciate it when anybody takes the time to go ahead and pass their ballot. But there's quite a few people every month who download without actually casting a vote.
Another thing that I've noticed is the way that it's set up right now, you download every song individually. That might be possibly deterring some people from perhaps downloading all 10 songs. In the future, do you envision any sort of system where you might be able to package all 10 songs for consideration into one single archive?
I've thought about doing that, and a lot of people have asked me to do that in the past, but there's 2 issues that would keep me from doing that. One is web space. Because that would add up fast, storing 10 songs a month. And the other one would be bandwidth. I mean, the first couple of days when I release the new entries, the number of visitors to the site is huge. of course, I advertise on a lot of the news sites around the tracking scene. And that bandwidth on that first couple of days would be killer. So you've got, you know, dozens of people coming to download 10 songs each. So between the web space and the bandwidth, it would be pretty difficult for me to run that all off of one server. So basically, I just link to the songs on other individual servers out there and kind of spread out the load. If need be, if somebody has a slow server or it's spotty, I'll go ahead and I'll upload the song to my own server. I can handle that for one or two songs.
Well, I was actually noticing on the April results that you said Digital Shadows by Vibe was the first chiptune to win.
That is, I think, only the fifth chiptune in compo history to run, actually. Under the original CMC, when it was only five or six songs a month, I rarely picked one. I think I only picked two chiptunes in 2 years. With the expansion to 10, I've been getting exposed to a few chiptunes that are a little bit better, and I have a little bit more freedom for picking songs that aren't necessarily my favorite, but I think might be other people's favorite. So I've been experimenting with that, and they've been holding their own. And then in April 2004, Vibe, who is a favorite of the voters anyway, in the past 4 months, he's won twice and come in third place another time. And in April 2004, he won with a chiptune that weighs in at only 6K. But it really doesn't sound like a chiptune, and I think that's part of the reason why it appealed so much to the voters.
What exactly is the differentiation between a chiptune and a non-chiptune?
It's kind of complicated. There's some people that say it has to sound a particular way, as well as being below a certain size. Other people just say size. And I really think the size is what matters most, the overall size. If it's, you know, if it's lower than 100K, mm-hmm. odds are it's a chiptune, and especially if it's lower than 50K, it definitely is. But something like 6K, like Digital Shadows was, that's definitely a chiptune. I mean, that's tiny. I have text files bigger than that on my hard drive.
Right.
So,
right. 6K is like if you type half a word in Microsoft Word, that's going to be larger than that.
Yeah, and it's incredible, too, that he could do such a great song with such a small amount of web space. It's stuff like that continues to amaze me about what tracking is capable of. I noticed you guys were talking last week wondering why I don't choose MP3s. I thought I'd go into that a little bit. Basically, I allow any file, like an IT, an XM, S3Ms, mods. Recently, I've also opened it up to MadTracker 2 and Scale. Basically, it's anything that can play in the current version of XM Play. The reason I do that is because XM Play now supports a lot of the Winamp plugins that allow you to play, like, for example, MT2 and Scale files. So if you download XM Play and then you install those plugins, you now have a player that can handle all of those formats. And it's a really accurate player. I think their text file says balls on accuracy. It's not quite that, but it seems to be better than Modplug Player from what I've discovered over time.
Really?
And I say this to somebody who loved Modplug Player for years, too, so it took a little bit of time for me to adjust. But in terms of the formats it cover, it's worth making that jump. And you can download that complete package right off the MIC website if you want to get XM Play and also get those plugins all in one file. All you got to do is just download it and unzip it, and there you go. But I really don't like picking MP3s. Because even if they say that it was originally done in a tracker song, because once you MP3 it, you can do anything to that file. You know, in terms of post-production, you can add in reverb, filters, sound gates, things like that. And I think once you start doing that, once you start making changes to that sound, it's no longer just tracking. Now you're getting into more professional music production, and I want MIC to be a tracking compo. And the only way you can be sure that it was tracked is if it's in one of those pure files.
Right.
And plus, I just like those formats. I mean, you can do a song like a good example from the mid-90s, Cosmic Outflow by Falcon. That song is less than a meg in size. I think it's 700 or 800K. The first time I played that for my brother, he did not realize it was a tracker song. And he knew I was into tracking. He thought it was a professional song. And that was done in the mid-90s with Fast Tracker under a meg. If you know what you're doing with these tracking programs and you pick good samples and you throw your all into it, you can do songs that sound professional. You can do it for a meg as opposed to an MP3 that's 4 megs, and I mean that saves a lot of download time. So
sure.
I want to keep promoting those original formats. I think they are strong enough. They can hold their own against MP3s. Quite frankly, I mean, there are people who complain that, oh, well, if I don't MP3 my song, then I'm not going to be able to reverb it, and it's going to sound awful. Listen, if your song sounds awful without reverb, it's really not going to sound much better with reverb. So you need to make it a good song to begin with, and that's one of the things that a tracking program forces you to do, is make it a good song.
So, right.
And those are just some of the reasons why I keep it limited to the source formats.
Very good. So we have the May Compo, which is going to be coming to a close soon. For those who want to get involved and vote in that particular competition, what is the deadline for that?
The deadline is, let me make sure I get the deadline right, it is Saturday, June 5th. I overlapped the actual end of the calendar month a little bit, so the May deadline is actually Saturday, June 5th at 11:59 p.m. New York time. So you have all the way to the end of Saturday to vote.
Okay, so for those that want to get involved, the website is novusmusic.org/MIC.
That's correct. You want to spell that out?
No, we're done with that.
Yep. As you can tell, I listened to last week.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Not a problem.
Well, thank you very much for being a guest on our show. We appreciate it.
Hey, not a problem. You guys do a great job. I hope you keep it up.
Okay, so that was Novus giving us feedback on the mic compo. We also have the results from the Extreme ASCII competition, which we spoke about last show. Congratulations to Deadbrain, Maybach, and Molo, who are the winners of the Old School, New School, and Block competitions, respectively. A complete results pack can be found at the Thug Life ASCII site at thuglife.org, if you want to check that out. Okay, we're now going to go to an interview with Dipswitch. Dipswitch is an organizer for the upcoming demo party Evoke, which is going to be taking place this August in Cologne, Germany. He's also an admin for the Scene Photo Archive Slungpung, as well as a member of the European art group Black Maiden. So we'll go to that right now.
Yes? Hello?
Hey, how's it going?
Yo, hi. Well, the demo show is over.
Okay.
It's quite a success. Now we're standing outside and smoking. Well, Fox is also here, the network organizer of Evoke. And Triple X from Hotop is boozing somewhere in the basement. So, well.
So now you're at some sort of a demo show which is taking place in Cologne, Germany, is that correct?
Yep. It's a demo show taking place in the rooms of the Cologne section of the CCC, and the CCC is, well, it's quite legendary hackers club, perhaps known Europe-wide and perhaps even known in the USA, I don't know. Well, they have, like, they have their central in Hamburg, but they have sections in all bigger German cities and stuff. So, well, we have corporations with them running, like, since 3 years. They are sometimes helping us getting stuff for Evoke done and things like that. So the hacker demo connection is running quite cool here.
Tell me more about this demo show that's taking place there. How many people, when we spoke earlier, you mentioned that it was standing room only and you kind of had to get a good seat. I guess you probably had to be there quite early. How many people wound up attending this event?
Well, I'm not always can tell how many people there are when I see the crowd, but I guess it were perhaps around 50.
Okay.
And, well, the room was quite small, so it was quite crowded in there. Mostly, it were hacking and data security activists. And, well, they were quite feeling it. They loved it, definitely.
So this particular demo show that you provided at the CCC, is this a space that the CCC always holds, or is this something? Is this a special event that you're giving the demo show at, or is the sole purpose of this the demo show itself?
Well, yeah, the sole purpose of the demo show was, of course, the demo show itself, but it's an event in a series of events. They do events twice a month. But it's mostly about security and stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And, well, once a year, since 3 years, we are doing a demo show for the people here.
Okay, very cool. So it's, I mean, for those that aren't familiar with CCC, I think the closest analogous equivalent that we have here in the United States is probably something like along the lines of 2600.
Yeah, of course. I heard quite a lot of them, and I used to read quite many text files from them earlier. Yeah, it's perhaps comparable. perhaps CCC is even kind of bigger because, well, they are quite often in the media and stuff. And, well, if, for example, there is a, I don't know, some data security scandal in Germany, so the media always ask some CCC experts about it. They are quite an institution here in Germany.
You're the propaganda minister for Evoke, which is an upcoming demo party.
Well, propaganda minister sounds kind of martial, but yeah, I'm the guy who is supposed to tell sceners to get their ass up and get to our nice little demo party, and that is what I'm supposed to doing right now.
So yeah, definitely do that. Now, as I understand it, Evoke is going to be taking place, what, in late August? Is that correct?
Yep, late August, 27th till 29th of August in Cologne, Germany.
Very cool. And I know that Evoke offers some sort of a combined party ticket with Buensley. Are you going to be doing that again this year, and how does that work?
Yeah, definitely. But it will be, last year, Buensley was after Evoke. So at Evoke, we sold combined tickets. You buy the ticket and you can go to both parties with it, and it's cheaper than if you would buy a single ticket to both parties separately. And this year, Buensley is 1 week before Evoke, so the Buensley guys will sell the tickets this year. You can go to Buensley, buy the ticket, stay in Switzerland for 1 week, and then fly over to Cologne with a cheap airline. You can hear in the background, by the way, the music from, I guess, it's Saturday Night Theater from Conspiracy, so the demo show is kind of going on still.
Oh, okay, very cool.
Anyway, I would like to address another topic about Evoke and, well, this radio show. I mean, people could ask themselves, hey, why Evoke is presented on the Arts? Like, there are several other demo parties, but the Arts is, well, a radio show which kind of comes from the PC art scene. Interestingly, the same thing is actually with Evoke. Evoke was held in 1992, and, well, the main attenders were German Ansi scene people, as well as the organizers. I mean, Black Maiden, who are, well, the main group behind Evoke. Well, it's an old German Ansi group. Although it's 2004, we're kind of still sticking to the roots of Evoke, which was actually PC art scene, and as perhaps the last demo party in Germany, we still host ANSI and ASCII compos.
Oh, very cool.
And, well, the most interesting thing for the listeners might be that you can participate in these compos without even being physically at the party.
Is that true for all the competitions or just specifically the text mode competition?
It's only for the text mode competition, like ANSI and ASCII. For the other compos, you, of course, have to be at the party. But for the ANSI and ASCII compo, we made an exception. And, well, on www.evoke-net.de, you can check the rules under rules, graphics. There are the rules for ANSI and ASCII, and also the email where you are supposed to send your entries. I think the deadline is like 25th of August, but I might be wrong, so better double check it. Well, and all people who are active on text mode art, no matter if ANSI or Block or Dollar Style or Amiga or PC, they are welcome to participate. And last year and the year before, we had, well, quite a quality compo. So we hope to get a really quality text mode art compo this year and just show the rest of the parties and the rest of the scene that there are still people doing quality ANSI and ASCII art.
Absolutely. Something that I didn't realize until, first of all, I've heard that Black Maiden has recently relaunched their site.
Yep. Since a few days, you can check out our new site at www.blackmaiden.de.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, now we finally have a site which we don't need to be ashamed of. The earlier site was just a kind of temporary solution, and now we got real nice web presence where you can check out, you can, by the way, you can check out all Black Maiden ANSI packs, also called Black Maiden books, online. You don't even have to load up AcidView. Also, of course, we would like to you to support Acid and get AcidView. But if you don't have it, you can still browse the packs online and watch ANSI and ASCII art nearly like it's supposed to look like.
I was checking out the site the other day, and something that I didn't realize, that Black Maiden has roots that run as far back as 20 years ago.
Well, it's quite a nebulous route. I don't know much about them, especially since I joined Black Maiden only in 2000. But yeah, the founding members, voice and text, well, the one or another guy might know them as Unzi artists too, but they were doing some cracking jobs on the Amstrad CPC as early as 1985. And so these two guys founded Black Maiden actually, yeah, in 1985 as a cracking group on Amstrad CPC. And, well, they discovered the PC at some point and the wonderful world of text mode art. And, well, the first Black Maiden pack, art pack, was released in December 1994, which makes Black Maiden PC actually 10 years old, which is quite something for an Amstrad group.
Yeah, absolutely. And is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about the Evoke Demo Party?
Well, there is quite a lot to tell about Evoke Demo Party, actually. I mean, some of the listeners perhaps have been to Evoke 2003, which, well, was at some kind of castle here in Cologne. And it was very crowded, and, well, there was definitely not enough place. Besides that, the location was really nice, but it was just too crowded. And for the people who experienced the sardine can feeling of last year, I can assure them this time we will have enough space. We got a new location, 650 square meters at the banks of the River Rhine. So, well, it will be quite a nice summer experience.
So for those that are interested or would like more information about Evoke 2004, you can check that out at www.evoke-net.de and get all the information there. Dipswitch,
yeah, exactly.
I'd just like to thank you very much for being a part of this episode.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
All right.
Well, it was really fun.
All right, take care. Okay, looks like we had two star-studded interviews this episode.
We have put on a great show.
Hey, we try.
We do.
That's why we get paid the big bucks.
Shit.
What's up?
My new car, man.
You got a new car today?
I got a new car. Not today, a couple of days back.
What'd you get?
I got a 98 Passat Volkswagen. It's going to break any day now. I can feel it. It's got like 100,000 miles on it, but I got it cheap, so who cares?
Well, Passat will last forever, man.
Really?
Yeah.
You see, I've heard different things, man. I've heard different things.
That is a fine piece of German engineering right
there.
Damn
right.
So you got a new car. How's that treating you?
I got to get used to the 5-speed, man. Got to get used to the 5-speed, but after that I'll be all right.
Well, what else is going on with you, dude? You got the new car.
I've been working with school, and I broke my Palm Pilot the other day, seriously. It was in my backpack, and I threw my backpack on the floor and crunch.
You did not break your Palm Pilot.
I did. My Palm 5X down the drain.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm not kidding.
Because just recently I had to order a new Palm Pilot as well.
Yeah. What happened to your old one?
That's why I say I'm not really sure I believe you, but...
No, I'm serious. I 100% broke... I will take a picture of the broken screen and send it to you, and you can include it in whatever.
Okay. Last week, my girlfriend, I guess you could say, she laundered my Palm Pilot 5X.
Oh, toasted.
Accidentally. So, for the last week or so, I've been carrying around this notepad and pen and calling it my Palm Pilot. You know, that's been the joke for the last week. Just today, actually, I received my new Palm Tungsten C, which is very pimpin'. Downloaded a copy of NetChaser, which is kind of the Palm OS equivalent of Mini Stumbler. It's pretty much one of the only programs of that ilk that are available for the Palm, and it only supports the Tungsten C, which is why I picked that model above all the other Sony Clias and other things that run on Palm OS out there.
You seriously picked that based on the availability of one app?
Oh, I'm serious. I mean, I could have had something that would play MP3s easily, and the Tungsten C is the shit, dude. What can I say?
I've seen them. I liked it. I liked my Palm 5X, but it's, like, dead now, so I've either got to get, like, a new Pocket PC or another Palm.
Yeah,
so.
You know, really, Pocket PCs, they're not for me. Yeah.
Now, how's the handwriting recognition on that? It wasn't too stellar on my Palm 5, so...
Actually, I was very proficient with the original graffiti. The Tungsten C has a number of different input options. I mean, the Tungsten C is one of the few handhelds out there, one of the few Palm handhelds out there, I should say, that has a full, like, QWERTY keypad on it.
Really?
So I can just enter things in by thumb typing, which I'm fairly adept at doing. But it introduces Graffiti 2 on this handheld. There are a lot of differences between Graffiti and Graffiti 2. Personally, because I've had so many years with the original Graffiti set, I guess I'm a little bit more used to it, so I have that preference, but
yeah.
I'm sure maybe, you know, the test of time will definitely tell me if, you know, which one I like better. But for right now, I am kind of missing the original graffiti. It's taken a while to get used to it.
Yeah. Well, you know, change is all right.
Yeah, change is good. Other than the whole new Palm Pilot thing, I'm recovering from a spectacular sunburn that I received a few weeks ago after I visited the Internet Archive. Of course, it seems like every radio show there's an obligatory race that I need to speak about, so I did the Beta Breakers, which is a huge race, and I mean it's the largest foot race in the world.
No shit.
Yeah, anywhere between 70 to 100,000 people attend. I believe their record is peaked above 100,000 people in attendance at this race.
So this is just racing to race, or was it for a benefit or something?
Pretty much all of these community races are going, they're contributing to some sort of a benefit or charity foundation out there. Beta Breakers is very large, so it actually benefits several.
Well, that's good to hear. You're giving back to the community.
Yeah.
We love you, dude. I mean, you make the world a better place. I'm, like, crying over here. What?
Your sincerity is overwhelming.
I know. If my tear ducts work, I would cry.
So, yeah, I got to do that. Man, I'll tell you, though, that was a winter sunburn. You should have seen it.
Oh, yeah. See, I hate it when you're just chilling outside. You know, you're having, like, a friendly time with the sun and all of a sudden, like, he's like, you want to fight? And he sends these UV rays after you, man, and you're just toast. I mean, there's no fighting it.
Check this out. Like, 2 days after the sunburn,
mm-hmm.
Have you ever had this happen? I took a shower, got out of the shower, toweled myself off. Looking in the mirror, like, you know, getting ready to shave and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at my shoulders, and there's still, like, beads of water on my shoulders after I just dried off. And I'm like, what the hell? And so I dried off again. I towel myself off again. And still there. And, I mean, these look like perfect dewdrops, like, just resting upon my shoulder. As if they were, like, dewdrops on a 7-Up can in some, like, airbrushed photo ad or something like that. And, it turned out that it wasn't water from the shower. These were like miniature, like perfect little blisters from the heat.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was great. There's nothing better.
That's pretty bad, dude. I bet you use SPF 30 next time, huh?
We're going way off topic here, but I just want to say that people travel from all over the world to go to this race, the Beta Breakers.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, they travel from all over the world, and I'm not just referring to the Kenyans. This is like a huge party.
Yeah.
So basically everybody, like, after the 5,000th person crosses the start line,
mm-hmm.
and it takes several, you know, minutes to an hour before you even do that, pretty much everybody behind that is just doing it for fun. There are people that are actually pushing shopping carts with kegs in them, and there's actual caravans with full bars. And
oh, God, that's terrible.
People are dressed up in various types of costumes. There's like, a lot of streakers that run it. It's kind of crazy, man.
Sounds fun, dude.
That's all I have as far as current events. In the future episodes, there's a couple things for people to look forward to. We're going to be featuring an episode with a Radman from a different world.
No shit. There's another one out there?
Well, there's, I mean, with the advent of the internet and AOL, I mean, there are a ton of Radmans out there, I'm sure.
But,
right?
But you are the raddest.
there is another Radman out there that got his name sometime in the 80s. The particular Radman that we're going to be interviewing is the Radman of the American Commodore 64 group, TSM, or the Shaolin Monastery, which was a well-known import group throughout the late 80s.
See, that's like way before my time. I was only born in 87, so I have nothing to say on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty fucking old school. What can I say?
Yeah, that is old. That's back when you had your 100-pound IBM, huh?
Yeah, that was back when I had the portable. Yeah, I see you've been reading.
Yeah, I've been reading.
Yeah, that was back in the day when I had my old IBM portable, so-called, well, it wasn't a laptop.
It's a laptop?
Yeah, I don't know what you want to call it, dude. It was a desktop with a handle. Let's see. Also in future episodes, we're going to be doing a behind-the-scenes on the arts. We'll be discussing how we produced the show, and of course we'll be featuring more interviews.
Yeah.
So, Anthem, thank you very much for subbing in for Spin Sane this episode and being a part of the show. You did a great job. I really do appreciate it.
Hey, yeah, sorry about the old timing issue, by the way.
Oh, don't worry about it. Taking us out of this program, our closing music is Italiano by Little Bitchard of MFX. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Later, I go to eat at a big restaurant. The waitress brings me a spoon and a knife, but no fork. I tell her I wanna the fork. She tell me everyone he wanna fork. I tell her, you don't understand, I wanna fuck her on the table. She say, you better not fuck on the table, you son of a bitch. I don't even know the lady, and she calling me a son of a bitch.
The arts.